Welcome to the CXR Channel, our premier podcast for talent acquisition and talent management. Listen in as the CXR community discusses a wide range of topics focused on attracting, engaging, and retaining the best talent. We're glad you're here.
Well, hey, well, welcome to this podcast. I'm Shannon Pritchett, Managing Director at Career Crossroad. And today, my special guest is Neil Casey. He's a global head of sourcing and strategic hiring for ThoughtWorks. We're going to be talking about challenges, but Neil, why don't you say some good things about yourself first?
Yeah, thank you, Shannon. So, give a bit of an introduction. As you mentioned, I'm global head of sourcing and strategic hiring at ThoughtWorks. I have spent the last 16 years in talent acquisition, primarily in the technical tech space. So organizations like Oracle, Randstad, Sourceright, Capgemini. So again, primarily consulting or product. I've been at ThoughtWorks now for 4 years, starting in the UK and then growing to where I am now in a global leadership role. And my responsibility primarily at ThoughtWorks is to drive an engine of sourcing and engaged, directly sourced candidates into the pipelines and call queues for our recruiters around the world. I have a team in Pune in India, which primarily drive that, as well as strategic hiring across the US and UK to hire all of our operations and leadership roles around the world.
Yeah. And you just got back from Pune, right?
I just got back from a week in Pune, yes. So it's fantastic. For those that aren't familiar with India, it's always had a very strong talent acquisition driving the delivery because of the nature of tech taking a lot of its outsourcing to India. So they've always had to be very good at driving high volumes of recruitment. But their sourcing capability and the expertise that they've now been able to generate globally has been fantastic. I'm lucky to have a team. I mentioned the other day that it's, as a leader, you're never meant to be the smartest person in the room because you're in the wrong room. You're supposed to build a team where that's the case, and I have no worries when it comes to going to Pune. The team are unbelievable. So yeah, it's been an education for me, and I see my job as actually just being able to provide a platform where it allows them to excel in what they do, really. So yeah, it's fantastic.
That's fantastic. That is. Now, at ThoughtWorks, do you guys outsource anywhere beyond India?
So it's a good question, actually. So as a business, when we talk about outsourcing, we do it internally. So we're not a company that delivers any of our solutions from a third party. We are, in our market offering perspective, which is tech consulting, we do a lot of bespoke technology. We're not an organization that sort of just implements third-party vendor software. A lot of your big system integrators can do that very well. We are, I suppose, in the digital space, we're probably aligned more to a McKinsey model, where we come in and do premium end consulting services, digital transformation, and bespoke software build. So that's where we tend to position ourselves. Because of that, and because of the rates that we charge from a commercial perspective, clients want to know that we're doing the job that they're paying us to do to a point, and they're getting that level of service. But what we have been quite good at doing over the years is distributing some of our internal projects to locations where they have a stronger resource pool, but also the cost model can be more effective for our clients. So China and India have historically been that. What we're seeing now with the globalization and the native market development in India and China, so they have a lot more clients within their native markets. They're now transferring the distributed work to other regions. So places like Ecuador, Chile, Thailand, Singapore, those are now becoming the sort of the sub-distribution model for ThoughtWorks and for a lot of tech companies. So it's been great to see places like Chile and Ecuador, where they've been consumers of tech, now being the originators of the build itself, which is quite cool.
Yeah, that's very fascinating. You don't hear those countries thrown around when we talk about outsourcing, so that's fascinating.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, as you'd imagine, the knock-on effect of that is that talent acquisition in those countries where historically hasn't been very mature are now having to mature pretty quickly to meet the demand of the business. So hiring full-stack developers and all of these more advanced technology profiles in those countries, they're having to learn quickly, they're having to adapt quickly, and I suppose the globalization of our business has meaning that the learnings that we brought from other regions are now having to be dropped and shared with those developing countries as well, which is, again, a new challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're talking about challenges today. We did a benchmark pulse check with CXR members, and automation was by far the biggest challenge that came back that leaders were worried about facing in 2020. You know, how are you addressing that and your role and what you guys are doing at Thoughtworks?
Yeah, and I think automation's always a very interesting point because firstly, my view is, ironically, I think you have to have an opinion viewpoint on automation in terms of where you see the impact of it having the most positive return. And I think that if you've got a business where your recruiters are looking for the opportunity of doing less work, then it becomes automation also almost replaces the role of the recruiter because the recruiters want to do less pre-screen calls and all of those things. I'm a big believer in the fact that you get what you put into a point. And I think that if you're looking at automation as an augmentation of the human interaction in recruitment, so if you're wanting to augment and provide a more capacity for your recruiters to have an impact through the skills that they bring to the role, I think it's a really powerful way of looking at it. And I think at Thoughtworks, we have different challenges to solve. Part of that has been in some of our more high volume markets. So in India and China, where we see huge, if you're looking at a channel mix between inbound sourced and referral candidates, the challenge of just managing that inbound can become quite restrictive from a capacity perspective to allow you to do the other things that are higher conversion rates and better quality. So automation has helped a lot with that management of inbound candidates in terms of that initial screen and that initial waiting around how do we get to the more, I suppose, aligned candidates from the noise that we see coming through. So that's one part. The other part has been the things that we all hate in recruit. I say hate, hate's a strong word, but that aspect of recruitment around the administration, so the scheduling of interviews, the communications through process, which candidates like to see, and they need to be obviously customizable, but also they're not necessarily looking for you to become best friends in that level of comms. They just want to know where their interview is, who they're meeting, what time, all of the things that they need as part of that engagement piece. So automating around that has been a big piece. And also interviewers, getting availability of interviewers internally. Thoughtworks has, like many consulting businesses, a commercial number attached to every single one of our employees. So if they're not on a client site doing work as part of an engagement, they're not generating revenue for the business. So there's a cost involved every time we ask someone to come and do an interview. So how do we use automation to schedule that effectively with people's availability? And how do we minimize the commercial impact around that?
Yeah. Now, have you implemented anything yet, or is that just the goal for the show?
It's a good question. So, yes, we have. So, our ATS helps us schedule some of that automation around inbound queue management and inbound application management. That's been really good from a waiting of questions perspective. There's a lot more advanced stuff out there. I know IBM, for instance, do a lot with their Watson tool to help sort of augment a bit of that. We are managing it a little bit more effectively than we were. Is there still steps to go? Absolutely. We're lucky at Thoughtworks to have a rec systems team. So we have a team of developers and BAs and QAs built just for our technology for recruitment, which is great. Not everyone has that. Some companies have more advanced stuff than we do. But what it's allowed us to do is build certain tools, one of which is called Bridge, which is links between our ATS system, our internal resource system, and started to build out that scheduling capability and automation that we were talking about. So that's been quite a big game changer. However, as with all technology, it's the people change around the technology that actually sometimes is the restrictive factor. So you can put solutions in place, but if you don't put the actual change management in place and get people's behaviors aligned to the technology solution, then it's only as good as the people it's involving. That's the next step of where we are with that.
So I guess another challenge is people using the automation.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm always fascinated with diversity hiring outside the U.S. because obviously in the United States, we have our own, you know, set of criteria that makes the candidate diverse. You know, being that you are located in the U.K., Thoughtworks is there, you know, from a European standpoint, is there anything that Thoughtworks is doing around diversity, or is that a challenge for your organization, or is that something that you guys are tackling?
Yeah, so it's a good question. So just to set the scene for Thoughtworks' approach to diversity, we were set up 27 years ago by a guy called Roy Singham from Chicago, actually. And Roy is, for lack of a better term, he's a huge left-wing political activist, huge with regards to social justice, social inclusion. And his view when he set up Thoughtworks was to not only create a company that innovated in tech, but also had a really strong lens around the impact that technology played on the communities around us and the and society as a whole. I think in the early 90s, the majority of tech was driven by large-scale enterprises into large-scale enterprises. So it was also almost a case of who could afford. And it was almost like a drip-down economy to the rest of society, where Roy's view was it should be the bottom-up and society should drive the direction of tech. Not saying Roy got it right, but if you look at the major tech players now, Amazon, Uber, all of the large tech players are driven by the users of primarily society that then businesses look for business application from. It was the other way around 30 years ago. So Roy's view has baked a DNA of social inclusion, social justice, into everything ThoughtWorks does. So for the last 30 years, around which tech we work with, which clients we work with, how do we build a community of like-minded technologists? So from an interview process, and if I was to look at the different stages of diversity, I suppose, and more importantly, I suppose, inclusion, diversity forms the approach that we take to market. So how do we proactively create equality of opportunity? And I say equality of opportunity very intentionally, because what we don't try and achieve is equality of outcome. I think that if you try and socially engineer the end results, you're not getting a true representation of what you're trying to achieve. Yeah, so I think creating, but I think it's absolutely advantageous, and it should be intentional that you should create diversity of opportunity within the pipelines that you generate. Too many people just claim that the market's not giving them what they need in order to be diverse. Of course it's not. It's the market conditions you're trying to artificially avoid by being intentional. So we've done that for now for a number of years. I think the other aspect of that is that's about the sourcing piece, the engagement piece, and how do you convert, and how do you become a strong player in that diversity recruitment space, is that everything we get told from every, I suppose, version of diversity is that people need to see themselves within a business that they're talking to. They need to see that inclusion. They need to visualize themselves within it. And that goes everything from the website, from the case studies, from the work that you're doing within that space, to the conversations that they have, the people that they meet through the process. The process itself, is it set up to bring out the best of people with different diverse requirements? All of these things you have to be cognizant of. And I think we do well in some areas. Gender diversity is a big strength of ThoughtWorks. It has been for a long time. The Anita Borg Awards, for instance, in America have had us, I think we won the last 4 years on the spin, which is great. And again, we don't do it for awards, but it's great to be recognized in that space. And if it helps us become a stronger presence in that space, brilliant. So that's been the background of where we are. I think currently we operate at having a gender diversity target, and we don't mind saying our goal, as it's probably best positioned, because it is a goal. Whether we hit it or not, it's a goal that we have, but it's around 40% in the tech space, which in an industry of around about 13 to 15% on average, the gender diversity space has been a real key of ours. Where we are now evolving, and I think this is the challenge that everyone has, as you mentioned, with the US, is so many factors around diversity. There's sexuality, there's disability, there is gender, there is ethnicity, there is cross-sectional diversity, which incorporates all of those things. We, for a long time, I think, were quite organic in the growth of knowledge around those things. We tended to learn. And I think one of the big strengths is actually harnessing our community internally and not being seen as the company doesn't always know best what's best for everyone. If we're trying to create an inclusive business, our community and our employees need to bring that to the surface as to what that looks like. So it's been quite organic, and I think we've still got a long journey around that. The challenge we have from a TA perspective is reporting. How do you report that? How do you judge? How do you pull levers to make that better? Because in the UK, in Europe, there are a lot of legislations about what you can and how do you identify someone coming through a pipeline that's coming from a previously underrepresented group or a diverse group. I think in the US, it's a lot more accessible because what you can ask people and what you can't. We are trying to work around that through disconnecting the results that we get from surveys in process to the individuals themselves. So we can see trends. So if we looked in the UK or Germany or any region that we have where we have certain legislation or laws, we can look at trend analysis. So what does our pipelines look like for engineering over a 3-month period? And then if you can work on that trend, then if you can build a higher percentage of diversity within the pipelines, it's going to automatically come out of the other end as hires and a diverse business. But yeah, with everything from GDPR to all of the legislations, both regionally and geographically from a country and an EU perspective, it's can be quite difficult in Europe as opposed to what we see in North America. And Brazil's bringing new laws in now. So there's a lot of navigating around what you can and can't hold.
Sure. You know, out of curiosity, I don't know if this falls under GDPR, but do you have access or do your recruiters have access to self-identification questions that you fill out?
So the answer is no. We're building a new reporting approach to diversity. So we're the question I had this morning was, where do we hold that? Do we hold it on a platform which the recruiters have access to the trend data so they can see their trend over a period of time? Or do we hold it on a centralized MI system, which we have, that the recruiters don't have access to, but the heads of recruitment can then filter that down? My viewpoint was very much based on the Career Crossroads event I went to last year in Washington, which one of the biggest bottlenecks was recruiters not having access to the data. And it's difficult to then direct your activity focus based on data if you don't have access to it. And you're at the mercy of the more senior people of the business providing that. So in terms of access to individual data, no, we have to intentionally separate it. So we have survey tools that we can use, which will be captured on a candidate, or it won't even be captured on a candidate record, but it could be captured against a job. I know in the US you call them job slates. So we could theoretically send questionnaires out to the prospecting pool or the candidate pool that will then drive trend data for that particular job skill set.
Yeah, very interesting. I think that's a challenge that many organizations
do. You need to separate the two though, because if someone was to say that they didn't get a job for X reason given on their survey result, if you have the two connected and you can go into someone's record and see their diversity during the interview process, regardless of whether it is true or not, that the person could theoretically claim they didn't get a job for an X reason and they disclose that on their thing. So they're happy to do it once they join the business, and we capture that on our people system. So we can then look at it from an employee perspective. But yeah, trend analysis rather than specific data as far as the recruitment pipeline.
That's very interesting. Switching subjects, one of the questions I was most excited to ask you about today, I don't know why, maybe you're not going to be too excited about this topic, but was training recruiters and sourcers and retraining. I like that that's a challenge that many organizations are facing. In one of the Career Crossroads meetings last year, I believe it was the sourcing meeting that I attended, there was a build versus buy discussion around training impromptu. And many leaders were really wanting to build something themselves. The recruiters and sourcers have already been trained, you know, with the various organizations that they're out there, but they kind of wanted their own thing and they were struggling because, well, first off, the cost to build your own is expensive. I've done it multiple times before. Also, the knowledge, you know, how do you put it in? You know, what are you guys doing around training? Is that a challenge? Retraining.
Yeah, of course. I mean, just firstly, of course I'm excited by this. Yeah, why wouldn't I be? It's a good question. And I suppose our position on this is, it's almost like a sit on the fence routine because we've done a bit of both. I hope you don't mind me sort of plugging organizations that we've used. We, about 18 months ago, when we were looking at productivity around the business, part of the shift that we needed to make was getting, and this is one of the metrics KPI points we look at, is getting recruiters to a certain hires per month per head. That was one of the, if we, as a global organization, we wanted to move from X number of heads to X number of heads over a period of time, we could base that on a segmented productivity improvement over time. And in order to do that, one of the big things was looking at how do we, upskill our recruiters. And the position we took was that we had a lot of transactional skill sets within the recruiter space. They could take jobs, they could CV screen, they could do pre-screen calls, and they could push candidates through a process. But where we had gaps was that if you were to look at the transformation of a recruiter to a talent advisor, so someone who could theoretically and practically influence the business around hiring decisions, around candidate markets, around all the things that actually allow you to then do the transactional work more effectively. So we partnered with a company called Recruiting Toolbox. I don't know whether you've come across them, they're US-based. What they did was they created a bespoke training solution for us. So we partnered with them for, I think it was a 3-month period, and they went round the business. So they met with our senior business leaders, they met with our heads of recruitment, they met with recruiters, they did a full discovery of our talent acquisition and our talent acquisition's engagement with the wider business. So what were the MDs saying about recruitment? What were the CEOs saying about recruitment? So they got a full picture, and then they built a 3-day training program based around 3 different sectors: our partnership with the business and the stakeholders within the business, our partnership with candidates and our ability to influence in that space. And then a 3rd day was around a role play practical session of both areas. And it was something that we, obviously it was bespoke to us. It had case studies and all the different things that would be associated with ThoughtWorks, rather than necessarily being a white label plug and play. It was very, very specific. So we rolled that out firstly in the US to the US team with the help of Recruiting Toolbox in terms of a facilitator. So they walked us through it. A guy called Matt Grove, if he ever listens, big shout out to Matt. He was great. But what we then did was a trainer session in the US, where myself and a number of other senior leaders at ThoughtWorks TA were able to then go out to the different regions and do a training course for all of our recruiters, our recruitment operations, and our sources. What we quickly identified was that we thought that a lot of the skills that we were going to do, because we aimed it at recruiters, they're the majority of our skill sets, but influencing skills, business case generation, being able to have critical conversations and all of these things, they're unilateral, regardless of your role. Whether you're trying to negotiate with a manager to do an interview as a rec ops or scheduling person, or whether you're having a conversation with a recruiter and a sourcer to try and talk about a current pipeline challenge or whatever it is, these type of abilities to use data to build a case for reverse engineering a recruitment process, all of these things were formed as part of that training. So it was a really strong game changer for us. And we got a 25% uplift in recruiter productivity over a 12-month period. Obviously, there were other factors, but that was a big factor around, obviously, our ability to do more work or more effective work, but also to get more out of what we were already doing by converting higher percentages of the throughput and the pipeline that we were seeing. So that was one factor. The other factor was around building the business itself created bought in a new tool called Curator, which is a learning platform tool. And the majority of the business were quite slow to look at the tool to really build out anything anything of any value really for their different communities, whether that was the engineering community or marketing or whatever it was. Recruitment really jumped on it. So we were able to build a onboarding module or an onboarding training program, actually, with a number of modules, whether it's to do with the ATS, whether it's our approach to data, whether it's our approach to pre-screen calls and propositioning and positioning ThoughtWorks and the proposition of the employer brand for all new joiners to do within their first week of joining. So there was a two-prong attack, sort of onboarding, and then for the more experienced people. We're now going into the second phase of the talent advisory piece. So we're going to be rolling that out again now this year for all new joiners coming through. That's been the big plan. Hopefully, from our perspective, it's something we can then start distributing to the regions so they can start doing their own, they can roll it out themselves for new joiners. But up to now, I think we're still, that core training team is going to be still the main distributor of knowledge, if you will, in that space.
Yeah. I like having a training background myself. I like that you took both approaches, you know, you bought and built. And so, the model really, really works because it allows it to be sustainable and kind of stands the test of time. So you don't have to completely rely on the third party team coming in or Recruiting Toolbox. Is that something that, you know, the leaders can continue to evolve and make it your own? So
absolutely. Yeah. And all the materials were ones that we could keep. We can edit, we can evolve as the business evolves. So all of that. And I think with a lot of these things, we obviously, as technologists, as recruiters, as sourcers, we always tend to look for the shiny new thing. It's always quite cool to see the shiny new thing. So yeah, so I think as we talked about core best practices of talent acquisition, of sourcing, influencing skills, candidate management, pre-trial closing, sort of trying to take all of the surprises out of a process way beyond the point of where you need to actually have that conversation. Those things have always been best practice. And I think that if you look at the best recruiters, you look at the best sources, they've always got a strong commercial mindset. They understand their work, how their work affects the business. They understand all of the factors that could potentially go wrong. They take the bullet out of the gun before it ever gets to the point of it needs to be fired. And they're very rarely the ones who have anecdotal reasons as to why things don't work or why things haven't worked. They're always very proactive around the data. They work on trends, they work to the numbers, and they understand, and they have a core directional sense of what they need to do to be successful. Those things were reinforced by the training. I think any little bits and pieces we need to do with tooling, we can add as we go along, but those core traits are the main things, I think.
Yeah, excellent. Now, what have we left off? What other challenges are you seeing this year?
So one of the biggest changes, I would say. I wouldn't say it was a challenge. It was actually a joy to be part of, but part of my role, as I mentioned, is to work with the sourcing COE in Pune. I joined the team to lead the team Q2 of last year. And part of the role of that operation was to originally formulate itself as a hypothesis to find out whether sourcing was something that we could really drive. It was originally targeted at more sort of operational sales hires where we were seeing a lot of agency spend. But we quite soon identified that the ability to influence the core work that we do, so hiring developers, hiring product people, the main consulting skill sets would probably have the biggest impact because you can see a revenue attached to every single person we hire. So there's a direct line between hiring people and the company making money. It's not always the case if you work for big product companies. It's like, what impact does that developer have? It's difficult to tell sometimes. And I think the team itself are incredibly strong sourcing practitioners. Their skill set around technology, their ability to work with tools far more advanced than what we use day to day is amazing. And they're constantly pushing the boundaries. And I think I think my biggest challenge and biggest opportunity was for that team, as it was for at the time, was to how do we give them a larger platform? We're a company that's growing from 4,000 to 10,000. And if we are, if we're looking at this function as being an engine, how do we get a bigger part of that pie? So that was my challenge. And I suppose at the time, we were running a pro team of around four people. We had about 38 live candidates around the world, scattered to the four winds in different roles that we were working on. But it was a case of how do we actually own, how do we drive, how do we look at hiring as a core directive of the team as well. So fast forward where we are now, I think we've done a bigger education piece around the commercial side of the business. Actually, what impact do the sourcing team have? It's not just about how many converted candidates, it's about actually how do those progress through, how do we work with the recruiters effectively, how do we become the custodians of the end-to-end process rather than just that front-end funneling piece, because that's where the hard work happens, but you don't want to waste that. You want to make sure that whenever they get into the process and the recruiters pick things up, that they're running things as effectively as possible. So we worked with that, we built in new technology and metrics. We now have a really tight literally, we have a TV monitor at the end of the desk where we can see outreach schedules, we can see execution schedules, we can see the converted range from how many candidates do we reach out to how many land on the ATS, to how many get contacted by the recruiter, to the gap that ones that don't get called by the recruiter, to the ones that get rejected with no response, so we can minimize the leakage. So we've got all that running through. And I think at the moment, we've gone from 38 live to around about 600. Over a period of 9 months. And we made, I think we were responsible. I mean, again, considering compared to some companies, it's not that big, but for us, it was a big thing. I think last year we started with 27 hires. Last year we went to 138, I think it was, and we're already up to nearly 50 this month alone. And we've gone from a team of 4 to a team of 15. So we are, that's going to be my personal biggest challenge. But then also coupling that into the wider business sense, because I think as a company, we're investing in recruitment a lot. We're probably the highest investment that the company are making from an operations perspective, which is really good. And I think that's part of that journey that we're going on, ranging from going from, we took 25 years to get to 4,000 people, and we're going from 4,000 to 10,000 in about 3.5. So it's good. It's good, and it's a challenge. And as everyone knows in talent acquisition, you either have one type or two types of pressure. It's either pressure because you are recruiting or pressure because you're not recruiting. And I would rather have the first, because it gives you more options to impact. So I think, yeah, that's where we currently are right now.
Absolutely. Good. Now, what events will we see you at this year?
Good question. So I am going to be at a sourcing event for yourself. So Career Crossroads, I'm going to be attending the event in San Diego, which I'm massively looking forward to. I know Mark's going to be there. I know yourself's going to be there. Barb's there. So I'm looking forward to that. There's also an event. I'm looking at a number of events, actually. SourceCon's in May, but unfortunately I can't attend it because I'm going to be in India. Unfortunately, I can't do that. The other thing that we don't know at the moment is, unfortunately, and I know it's a global phenomenon at the moment, is the coronavirus coming out of China.
Yeah.
So as with most companies who have global remits, especially with larger businesses in China, that we are being intentionally sort of quite pragmatic around the amount of travel that we're booking ahead of knowing what the full business impact is with that. So there's a number of things on the potential list for events this year. But until, I mean, obviously the virus and people's health is far more important than educational learning or professional learning at the moment. So we're still trying to get a handle on that before I commit to anything else. But yeah, I was meant to be in China this week, actually. I think we're starting to see a slight dip in the numbers, but every day it seems to go like that. So.
I know. Talk about an unknown challenge we didn't see when we started this whole conversation.
Yeah. I've had two big things that like literally come out of left field since I've been working in talent acquisition. Coronavirus is one, and we're seeing that right now. And at one point, Russia invaded, the Ukraine or Crimea. They invaded Crimea. And I was working for a company that had a lot of, a big business in Russia, and we were hiring salespeople. But unfortunately, we couldn't, because the UN sanctions that they put on, you couldn't do any work with a company that had a Russian member of parliament on its board. Now, working in Russia for large international conglomerates, not having a company that has a member of parliament on the board is quite few and far between. So it stopped my sales hiring. Vladimir Putin was the bottleneck in my recruitment pipeline.
Oh, that's, yeah, wow. Yeah, that's the new one for us. For me, I think it was when the economy crashed here in the U.S. about 12 years ago. Like you said earlier, you know, you either are nervous because you have a lot of hiring, or you're nervous because you're not hiring. And that was,
yeah,
because I was not hiring.
There's only so much competitor mapping you can do. I agree. I think at the moment, looking at there's a lot, as we know, everywhere in the world, there's a lot of political just randomness going on around the world, whether it's in the US, whether it's in the UK with Brexit, which we still don't know the impact and the full ramifications of that. Europe's obviously feeling that effect as well. And then China economy seems to be slowing down, obviously. And then we've had the virus challenges. So there's lots of, being in a global role, you tend to see a lot of these geopolitical and geo factors that you don't necessarily normally take into account when you're just trying to recruit devs in London. Which is quite interesting. But I think I've always believed that everyone who works in TA is a business person. It just so happens that they execute their business within that talent acquisition function. And that's one of the messages I give to my sourcing team, that they are business people. They shouldn't, I mean, not that being a sourcer is anything less than brilliant, but they execute their skills and their experience and their talents through that medium. So they have to be cognizant of these things in order to be able to position their skills in the right way. So yeah, it's very interesting.
Well, thank you so much for your time. It's been a fascinating conversation.
Thanks for listening to the CXR channel. Please subscribe to CXR on your favorite podcast resource and leave us a review while you're at it. Learn more about CXR at our website, cxr.works, facebook.com and twitter.com/careercrossroads, and on Instagram @careerxroads. We'll catch you next time.